is Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, and tune in. If you want the show live tonight, you're either watching it by way of our subscription feed, the video cast, or you're listening on TuneIn, or you're listening to the live feed that we provide on our website at philhendryshow.com, or you're listening to one of our many fine affiliates. Great broadcasters across the country on the terrestrial thing. Welcome to our show, and for those of you that tuned in to Phil TV and HD, you would be our subscribers, our Backstage Pass members. I wanted to publicly apologize to you, not just to you on the Backstage Pass feed, which is our pre-show, which you guys have access to. I wanted to do it here over the air because I want everybody to hear what occurred yesterday, and I would not make an issue of this were it not for the fact that it's a long-standing problem.
Well, so you're going to make an example out of Time Warner Cable. Is this what you're going to do, even after we talked about this?
Thank you for your advice, Margaret, but yes. Yes, what I'm going to tell my subscribers is that, as you well know, around, three or four minutes left in the first half, would you say? I'm not exactly sure when. Suddenly, we lost the game, and I thought it was most likely the service to our studio. We lost the Time Warner feed to our studio. As it turned out, according to the news this morning and last night, and I didn't even bother to look at the news because I just assume our service from Time Warner Cable has been so traditionally bad. And when I say bad, I'm not exaggerating. When you have to explain, you know.
Well, now, Phil, you've already beat this horse, you know.
Yeah, what do you want to beat on a horse for?
What do you mean beat on? You mean beat a dead horse?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
I ain't beating a dead horse, okay?
But you're beating on the horse.
You like saying...
Phil, he's saying beating on a horse because it's a euphemism, and he's all over there going, hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Well, I'm trying to lighten the mood.
Hey, pal, I'll lighten the mood when the mood needs to be lightened. Right now, it doesn't need lightening, okay?
Whatever.
No, not whatever, because here's the thing. When these guys came out here to our studio for another issue having to do with the internet... And the tech gets out of the truck, and the guy comes down to the backside of our building, and I say to him, you know, what do you think? Well, you know, sir, this and that. And I say, and I've already told you this story, but I think it bears repeating given the problems we had yesterday. And I pointed at one of the telephone poles that still serves to supply the communication grid here. It's not underground. Most neighborhoods are underground. And I said, why don't you check that connection there? This guy was about to jump into his truck and run off to Burger King after he called his maintenance department and put it through about 9 million different people and the red tape, you know.
Well, now, Phil, you know, these are guys that work for a living, so don't start busting their castanets just yet.
Hey, what is it with everybody? Listen to what I'm going to say, all right?
No, everyone wants to hear what you have to say.
We just don't want you to get... We don't want to run afoul of Time Warner now... While things are getting good.
What's getting good?
Well, at least you got your internet service back.
Oh, well, things are getting too good. I mean, that's living high. That's living high and mighty, man, when we actually have our internet service. No, I'm going to say this. What are you doing?
Well, I'm folding my arms and sitting and waiting, as one would, the presidential State of the Union address.
Do you guys have stock in Time Warner or something?
Why do you say that?
Because you're sitting here making sure that I don't run afoul of their feelings over there at Time Warner.
Just don't want to have nothing else happen.
Oh, look, you could treat those people at Time Warner with... You could send them chocolates every day. You could send them flowers every day. You could tell them that they're the greatest thing that ever happened to you. You could love them and need them and not live without them. And they're still going to provide the crap can service they always have. So, but anyway, here's the thing. When I got to tell this guy where to go to fix something... And that's exactly what happened. I'm not exaggerating at all. And he gets up the pole, and he tightens this thing. And that was it. That's all that needed to be done. He didn't have to call the maintenance department. He didn't have to do anything else. This is what, by any measure, is considered to be not only substandard work, it's not even professional work. It's the work of an amateur, some kid that they sent out with a bag, you know, with a belt around him that he claims to be some kind of a technician. Now, what happened yesterday across the board, and I'm actually grateful that it did happen because... Now everybody knows, it made the news, Time Warner Cable lost the Super Bowl feed. The service was interrupted, And the service was interrupted for me for at least a couple of... Now, here's what Time Warner Cable says they're going to do. They're going to give a credit. Here's what I'm going to do. Your credit, keep it. I'm going to DirecTV. And what happened was, it just so happened that one of our neighbors was installing DirecTV in his office, and I just went right up to the truck and got the guy's card, got the promo code, got the number, and DirecTV is coming in here within the next 2 weeks, and that's the end of the line for Time Warner, period, exclamation point, boom. So you can keep your credit, do whatever you want to do. As it turned out, we had to put an apology on the homepage and so on and so forth. Angry Time Warner cable customers across Southern California demanded the cable giant offer a refund or credit customers' accounts Monday after their service was interrupted. On Monday evening, Monday, that's how long it took them, the company announced that all L.A. area customers would automatically receive a gift of appreciation following the blackout. Oh, brother. This is digital TV customers will receive a credit for the cost of an on-demand movie. How do you like that? That's about, what, $7? And analog customers will get a $5 gift card that will be provided automatically. No customer action is necessary, they said very proudly, snapping their suspenders with their thumbs. Time Warner's analog and standard definition feeds, boom, 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 boom. They all went dark on Sunday during the second quarter of the big game. The outage also affected Southern California stations KCAL and KTLA. Time Warner Cable sent out a tweet Sunday around 4:45 and said it was investigating the issue. L.A. customers were investigating an issue, yada, yada, yada. Part of the Coachella Valley in Ventura County also experienced signal losses, according to the Press Enterprise. A number of viewers looked to social media to complain about the or took to social media to complain about it. Twitter user Ann McElhaney posted a picture of a dark television screen with the caption, "That's us not watching the Super Bowl." McElhaney told Channel 5 she's from Ireland, was watching her first Super Bowl when the screen went dark at a party in Northridge. Welcome to America! Another cable customer named Vicky Arkoff tweeted, "Worst cable company ever, Time Warner Cable fail." Well, that's the truth. The blackout lasted an hour. However, Time Warner Cable's high-definition channels were not affected. Ain't that just fantastic? They said most of their viewers watch the HD signal. Well, you know what, man? It may be most of your viewers, but there's a lot of people that don't, and it made the news. All right, so... your service sucks, and whether or not I have a high-definition television or not, which I may buy in the next, 48 hours, that doesn't matter either because I'm gone, man. I got me DirecTV, which I did have at my other residence, and we're going to get it again.
What do you think of that?
I thought DirecTV was phenomenal. I thought it was fantastic. We hardly ever had a problem whatsoever. The only problem we ever had with DirecTV was the occasional blurry screen or something because of or a scrambled screen because of some rain, but that happened maybe twice, three times tops, and their customer service was fantastic, and I loved everything about them. So that's what we're going to do, and thank you very much.
Well, you're very calm about it, but you know that they can. I'm afraid they'll get revenge.
What do you mean?
What do you mean by revenge?
Well, they'll mess with your internet connection. I don't know.
Yeah, and me. They may get in and monkey with the internet connection.
What about that? You know, they monkey around with.
I don't. No, hold on. I don't think they'll monkey around with any internet connection. My God, that'll. Why? Do you realize what will happen if they catch somebody monkeying with that?
Well, what do you mean they'll monkey with it? What is that supposed to mean? I know Phil had an issue with one of the technicians.
What are you looking all concerned for?
Well, what is this? A racist sort of?
It's not racist.
I'm talking, when we said monkey around, we're talking about an idiot.
It's got nothing to do with race. It's about the idiocy.
Well, I don't like you talking about monkeying around. What race was the technician that came out here?
You never mind, Margaret. It's got nothing to do with that. All right, so the guy won't monkey around. It'll be something else.
What guy?
The Time Warner guy that you say is going to monkey around with my internet connection because I'm complaining about their lousy cable service. It won't be, he won't monkey around. What will he do?
What do you mean he won't monkey around?
Never mind.
I don't know.
I just want to make sure you don't run afoul of the goodwill you've developed with your listeners.
Margaret, the term monkey around is not racial. It's some jackass. You know, that's what it did. It connotes an idiot getting in there and fixing something when, a smart guy should. All right, speaking of Margaret.
And monkey.
How dare you?
Hey, watch it. God, man. Margaret will be here in just a moment to comment and to report as well as Dr. Jim Sandler on the very, very tragic news of Philip Seymour Hoffman. That was a drag. I always enjoyed the great talent of that man. Capote, probably my favorite film of his was Capote. It was a brilliant, brilliant performance, and so many other great movies that were a part of his, you know, his resume. Philip Seymour Hoffman died of a heroin overdose, and there's been, you know, in the first few minutes there was of the word reaching people, there was an outpouring of sadness. I was one of them, and now, you know, 24 hours later or thereabouts, now the haters are jumping in and talking about how, you know, what a wasted life and this and that. And I just wonder, when people hate like that or when they criticize like that, are they really talking about how tragic heroin addiction is and what a, you know, waste of a life it is? Or are they just upset with their own lot in life? And a guy like Philip Seymour Hoffman, in their mind, got all the good stuff and he didn't deserve it. I just wonder.
Well, what do you mean? Are you saying there's jealousy?
I wonder, when I read people criticizing someone after that individual has died, if there isn't a little bit of that. I don't know. We'll find out. World famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 855-500-7445. And we're online, of course, at philhenryshow.com. Tune in. Get your TuneIn app and check out the Phil Henry Channel live every night, 7 to 10 on the Pacific Coast. And we'll be right back. Famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and with a backstage pass, you could be watching this thing, not just listening to it tonight. You could be watching us on our video feed, on our Phil TV feed, and who knows, you know, on any given night, that could be... Oy.
Well, you don't look too bad tonight, Phil.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that.
Well, you're always complaining about how you feel and how you look after a weekend. You don't look that bad.
Yeah, usually you're all, you know, what are you giving me the high sign for?
You don't talk about how I look because of whatever I did.
But look, Phil, let's say, let's put things in perspective. You had a better weekend than Philip Hoffman, didn't you?
That's not funny, you know.
I'm not trying to be funny.
Well, even if you're not trying to be funny, it's still not funny.
Gad!
Oh, give me a break, will you?
General, that was...
What about you, Robert? Didn't you give me some love for that one?
No, that was no good, General. No good, no. No.
Yeah, that sucked.
Well, you guys are... You know what? All of you people, you're like the proverbial fart. If I were dead and I was in a casket, you'd climb in and fart and then climb out and shut the lid and sit on it. I'm going to go get a vanilla...
A what?
I'm going to get a vanilla wafer. You want to come with me?
Yeah, you don't fart.
I'm not going to fart. I said...
We understood what you said, General. Thank you. If I was dead, you'd get into the coffin, fart, then climb out and sit on the lid?
Yes, he was talking about all of us, all four of us.
Yeah, we get in there.
Okay, anyway, welcome back to the program here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Margaret, a sad weekend indeed with the passing of Philip Seymour Hoffman. And I meant what I said. You know, I thought the guy was fantastic. And people that are addicted to anything, a drug, alcohol, you know, we know that alcoholism is a disease. Substance abuse is a disease. It has to do with the biochemistry of the brain. It has to do with our inability to cope with certain mood-altering chemicals. The brain chemistry cannot... For whatever reason, genetic or otherwise, it is unable to process properly these mood-altering chemicals, and we are drawn to overindulge, to abuse, to continue to take these drugs, as opposed to the rest of us who know how to moderate this. We don't need as much. We know when to stop and to move on and be sober for a few hours. And, you know, it's not party time 24/7. For a substance abuser, we all seem to think that it's a, I don't know, you know.
Well, we think that it is a personality issue, and it is not. Now, I've known some individuals, my nephew, who I was always a great kid, but Wolfgang... What?
Hold on. The young man's name was Wolfgang?
Yes, my nephew on my sister's side, which would make him my sister's son, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that's what...
Phil, don't look at me like I'm a bad relative. I just It is my sister's... Yes, my nephew.
Yeah, and his name's Wolfgang.
Yes, his name's Wolfgang. You got a problem with that?
Well, no.
No?
Good. He was a substance abuser. Now, he's cleaned up, and he's doing very well. But at the time, he abused heroin. Didn't abuse heroin. He was using heroin, which in my opinion is abuse. And he was also a slob. We didn't like him. He was an obnoxious person. So that does happen.
All right. So in other words, there's a mixture of not only the chemical abuse, but the person can be just a real jackass.
Absolutely. Now, Mimi O'Donnell told investigators she is the estranged, I believe the estranged significant other or life partner of Philip Seymour Hoffman. She told New York police that the Academy Award-winning actor appeared to be high when she saw him the day before he was found dead from an apparent drug overdose. Mimi O'Donnell told investigators that she saw Mr. Hoffman Saturday, 2 p.m. on the street near his West Village apartment, and that he appeared to be under the influence of drugs. She spoke to him on the phone at about 8 p.m. Saturday night, and he again sounded high, so...
Unreal. Now, he was 46, right?
Yes, he was 46 years of age. They discovered him 11:30 Sunday morning, unconscious. And this was a friend of his, a screenwriter, and his assistant, Isabella Wing Davy, also. So.
Now, Jim Sadler is going to join us, and I don't want to talk about any more about Philip Seymour Hoffman, because it's a specific story and has meaning and very, very painful resonance with a lot of people. I don't need to talk about that. We can talk about drug addiction and talk about substance abuse and the toll that takes with Dr. Jim Sadler from San Diego here. This evening, Dr. Sadler joins us. Dr. Sadler, my understanding is that you are an internist, but you have been on our program before talking on a variety of medical issues.
Yeah, you had talked about being a veterinarian.
Would you be quiet for a minute, please?
What did he say?
He said that you've been on our program talking about veterinary medicine, too.
That's right. That's right. Is that supposedly, knocking what I'm doing?
No, but it's just kind of weird.
Dr. Sadler was a veterinarian, right?
I was a veterinarian, yeah. Are you making... What's the problem? Wow.
No, there's no problem. You were a veterinarian, and then you became an internal medicine... You became an internist.
Yes, that's right, and...
Yeah, but you also came on here and talked about being a dentist and everything.
Would you shut up, bud?
You know, Phil, I got better things to do. I can rearrange my sock drawer. I can take a bath, and... I don't need this. No, I don't need this.
All right, I will ask Bud Dickman to just be quiet. While what you say is true, Bud, we don't need to indict the doctor, since you at one time were a veterinarian, and you also have been on our program commenting on dentistry. Are you a dentist?
No, I'm not a dentist. No, I've studied that. I know you asked me to come on the program.
But you represented yourself as a dentist at one time, didn't you?
I said that I had done some dental work. I had done some dental work for a brother. My brother had had very bad teeth. He'd had a toothache, and he needed a tooth pulled. If that makes me a dentist...
So all you did was pull a guy's tooth?
My brother's tooth, not just a guy.
Yeah, would that make you a dentist?
You know something? I'll see you later.
Would you shut up, bud?
Look what you did, bud. You can't keep your big mouth shut.
Bud, if people don't want to talk to you, don't say anything.
Now I'm going to let you call him back and try to talk him into coming back on the air.
I didn't know.
Yeah, you did know, because I keep talking to you about this, to shut your big fat bazoo, and you don't do it. Dr. Jim Sadler, who is an internal medicine, he's an internist, okay? So he's not a veterinarian, and he's not a dentist, even though he pulled his brother's tooth once, and he was on a show once talking about dogs and cats. And he has talked about psychology. He's none of that. He's just a regular family physician. But we have him on the show.
Yeah, you want to come back on? I don't know. But you're the one that hung up.
Can I talk to him, please?
Hold on. You're the one that hung up. Yeah, on account of what they said.
Give me the phone! Dr. Set, he hung up.
Yeah.
Give me that. I'll call him back. Dial the number. We're just... Hold on for a minute, folks. Dial the number.
See. I got it in my other book.
Hey, bud, don't screw with me, man, because you just called him back, so I know you got the number.
Sorry.
Hey, Dr. Sadler, Phil, he hung up again. Okay, well, that's it.
See, I told you.
No, you didn't tell me anything. You were just talking to him. We had him on the phone. Call him back and tell him we apologize, okay?
Yeah, he hung up on you.
He hung up on me. He didn't hang up on you.
Why would he hang up on you?
Hung up on Mr. Henry, because Mr. Henry's show is the one that what was rude to him.
Yeah, but he's not hanging up on you, and you're the jackass that was giving him a hard time. Why is that? You guys, boyfriend and girlfriend?
Oh, look out. Shut up.
No, I don't think I will shut up. All right, we're going to come right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Stick around. We'll see if we get the doc back on the line here.
Sacrifices.
Thank you. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. We do have Dr. Jim Sadler with us on the line, and we do apologize, Dr. Sadler. I'm not trying to, and I apologize on behalf of my staff, Dr. Sadler. We're not trying to indict your professionalism. I should not have brought a lot of this up. We have Dr. Sadler with us to talk about the dangers of addiction, obviously, the dangers of recreational drug use, legal or illegal. And this, of course, on the heels of obvious recent events. I didn't want to get into specifics. We've already mentioned the name Philip Seymour Hoffman. And so, Doc, to the extent that there was a misunderstanding.
I appreciate that. Let me just say I appreciate it. I heard your staff ask me about being a veterinarian, and the implication or the tone to the question was, what do you think? What are you, some kind of a weirdo, or, you know, are you some quack who used to work on dogs and teeth, and you also now do surgery? I mean, the whole implication of the audience was that I'm some kind of a weird quack, and I have a laboratory. You know?
Well, I apologize if that impression was given. Bud, you wanted to say you were sorry as well?
Yes, sir. I want to say I'm sorry. I didn't to call a quack.
Well, you know, I used the word quack, Bud. You don't have to, you know, but the implication was quack.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Dr. Are you saying you are crack? Did you say the implication is you're cracked or you're quacked?
Boy, I hope you're kidding.
No, no, no. She honestly couldn't hear you.
I couldn't hear you, Doctor. I'm sorry.
I'm cracked. The implication was that I was a quack. I didn't say I'm quacked. I said I'm cracked.
Because of the, well, you should say, Phil.
There is a perception because of the obvious, and you've referred to your speech impediment, that you said quacked instead of cracked.
That I said quacked, and so the R is a W on the count of, oh, okay, well, it's, you know something, you guys walked right up to the line on that one. I was about ready to slam the phone down again, but I, okay, I'll give you that.
By the way, are you on a cell phone?
Yes, I am.
Then what are you slamming the phone down into? There's no cradle, right?
No, but what I like to do is I slam the phone down, and then I turn the power off just to make it sound like I slammed it down.
Dr. Jim Sadler is with us as we talk about. Let's discuss this heroin. First of all, a person that is addicted to heroin, are they a bad person?
Of course, they're not a bad person. There are varying and differing amounts of commentary and scientific data and literature on addiction, Phil. As you have mentioned often, a great deal has been done in terms of the pharmacology. I think that there are people who are seriously addicted. There is nothing wrong with their character. And this is, as you pointed out, biochemical, as is the case with Philip Seymour Hoffman. There are others who are addicted to heroin or to other drugs who are morally suspect, who are morally degenerated to a degree. You and I and other people, and I can talk about it now with your audience, my wife, Melanie, who I met through my practice. She was a recovering drug user when I met her and married her. I saw her before we were married with the various men that she would be dating and associating with, gallivanting and frolicking about.
When you say gallivanting and frolicking, what do you mean, Doctor?
Well, Melanie was with a lot of different men, multiracial, you know.
Did that bother you?
I don't want to answer any questions from him.
All right, but just, but it's a good question. Did it bother you?
Did what bother me?
The fact that your wife-to-be, or at the time, you weren't dating her, right?
No, I would have nothing to do with the degenerate way that she was behaving. She would come into my office for her checkup and to get her methadone and also some Xanax, and oftentimes had some guy that she was at that time hanging around. I would say seeing, but that sounds like it was a legitimate relationship, and there was nothing legitimate about what they involved themselves in, I can well imagine.
All right, we're talking to Dr. Jim Sadler here about the dangers and the travesty of addiction. He's talking about his... Now, Melanie, you're married to.
Yes, I'm married to her now, but before we were married. And what happened this past weekend, recent events, reminded me of... Philip Seymour Hoffman was a good man with a very, very tough addiction problem. But my wife, Melanie, and I think she recognizes this, she was not a good woman. She was addicted to heroin, not because she had a biochemical problem, but, and I can say this now, I think, and I can say this without shuddering, I can say this without maintain control of my emotions, but she was addicted to heroin because she was just scum.
That's a very, very harsh indictment.
That sounded very strong.
Well, you know, let me just breathe a little bit. Melanie, before you go out, I'm on the phone now with the radio station talking about the scum that he was. She's going out for the night again. Boy.
That reminds me of what I shouldn't say, Dr. Sadler, but it reminds me of that very famous song that everybody knows about.
What song is that?
About Ruby taking it to the town?
In a lot of ways, yes. My relationship, it's not that pathetic. I mean, that poor man in that song was pathetic.
All right, we're talking about Dr. Jim Sadler. You talking about the song Ruby?
Yes, the song Ruby, where he's a pathetic guy in a wheelchair and she's taking it she's taking what she got into town, you know.
Well, do you feel that way? Do you feel like you're that man?
No, I don't feel like I'm that man, but look, this isn't about me. All of a sudden, I feel like I got all eyes on me, you know.
All right, our number is 855-500-7445, 855-500-7445. Let's go over to Bobby. Bobby, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Bobby.
Oh, hi. I'm Dr. Sadler. This is Bobby, and I'm a frequent guest of Phil's. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good. I wanted to ask you, when you say that she takes it to town, or she did take it into town, what is the it you're talking about?
Well, the it that I'm talking about is that she's taking it. She's taking the package that the men want, you know, if you,
I'm trying to tell my wife to talk about the app.
Okay, is that Steve? Is that your husband?
Yes, it is. Steve, honey, please.
Yeah, please ask him not to chime in like that.
Well, Andy said don't chime in.
No, I'm talking about the app.
Well, your husband's right. That's exactly what she was taking into town. She, excuse my language, Phil, but when Melanie went into town, she was taking her ass into town. Okay, there, you happy?
No, I didn't bring it up to be happy or unhappy, doctor. I simply wanted to be clear what she was taking into town. Did that make her the scum of the earth, as you say?
Not because she was taking it into town? No, that didn't necessarily make her the scum of the earth. But I think if you know the song Ruby, you know, you've painted up your lips and you've painted up your hair and curled your lips. And, oh, Ruby, don't take it into town, you know?
Well, I don't think that's exactly how it goes.
No, it doesn't go like that. I can sing the song if you'd like, Dr. Sadler.
No, I'd rather you not.
Well, what is that supposed to mean? You want me to be sensitive to your feelings.
All right, hold on. The song, I think, people, you've painted up your
I know the lyrics.
Hold on, Dr. Sadler, what is it?
You've painted up your hair and curled and rolled your tinted lips.
Are you nuts or something? That's not how it goes.
I don't think it goes like that, Dr. Sadler. I think it goes, Steve.
You painted up the lips and pulled cocked your hair. Ruby, are you climbing out? Are you climbing out the window to go out there? The shadow on the wall tells me the sun's gone down. Oh, Ruby, don't paint your face up like a clown.
Is that Glenn? Are you people trying to be funny? Because I can tell you right now, you're not.
I apologize, Dr. Sadler. Obviously, that was a crank call coming in from Bobby Dooley at Western Estates, and I had no idea.
Yeah, right.
I didn't have any idea, sir. Dr. Jim Sadler with us. Is that her?
Yeah, what are you trying to pull anyway, Dooley? Yeah. Mr. Henry, it's Booby Dooley.
Yeah, what are you trying to pull?
Phil, that was not us. That was my son, Justin, on the other end. And we did not hang up, and we were not trying. I'm sorry Steve got the words wrong to the song, but we're trying to find out the very bottom. We're trying to get to the bottom.
All right. Would you put everybody on hold for a second, please? My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. We obviously have a crank caller on the line. Ms. Dooley is claiming it's her eldest son, whoever, Justin. We do have Dr. Jim Sadler with us.
You know, Phil, a lot of people are going to be listening to this, and they're going to think you're making a big joke out of the tragedy of heroin addiction.
I'm trying not to do that. I'm trying to have the doctor speak specifically to the problem and not get off on a tangent about anything. I'm just trying to, you know, look, we know that it is it can be pharmacologically treated. We know that addictions are within the treatment reach of our doctors and researchers. They have the drugs that can manipulate the biochemistry of the brain and enable addicts to begin to recover. This is the first time in history that this has happened. We know that a lot of it has to do with other untreated trauma, psychological trauma. We know that in some instances there may be a character problem, but in most instances it has to do strictly with the terribly devastating physical reality of addiction.
Yay!
Don't applaud me.
Well, you know, Phil, it was good, but you got to get Dickman under control with the paint your face.
General Shaw, but don't make fun of that song. It's a Vietnam-era song, and a lot of the Vietnam vets like General Shaw, you know.
Well, it isn't so much that. It's when Dickman starts. Was that where that other guy sang it? He sounded like 100 yards of Jackass. And I'll tell you this right now. If he ever comes within fist range of me, it's fire one, fire two, all tubes empty.
Whatever.
All right. We'll be back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show with more from Dr. Jim Sadler and our discussion here about the problem of addiction and the solutions to the problem of addiction. The world famous Phil Henry Show. And welcome back to the world famous Phil Henry Show. Here tonight we have Dr. Jim Sadler with us. Look, I don't want to make this about Dr. Sadler, and I think that when you jump in here, Bud, you confuse the issue just a little bit, and you make things a lot less clear. You muddy the water. You're talking about Dr. Sadler. And again, Dr. Sadler, my apologies. We're not trying to make this about you. We are trying to make this about the problem. You did bring up one thing that I think is interesting. And that is your current wife, Melanie, before you met her.
Well, I brought Melanie up because I wanted people to know that you can be an addict and you can also, and I don't think I'm talking out of school, you can also just be, you know, a lowlife. And
you're saying your wife's a lowlife.
Will you shut up, Bud?
If you don't get that guy to shut up, I'm either going to hang up or I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive there and I'm going to do some...
Well, wait a minute, Dr. Sadler. This is General Shaw. You're not going to drive here and do anything, sir. I can assure you.
Well, would you please ask the guy?
Bud, be quiet.
Yeah.
Dr. Sadler, look, you're the one that said your wife is a lowlife.
I said my wife was a lowlife when she was using, and when she cleaned up, she started to get clean. She cleaned the whole thing up. Now, yeah, she went out tonight to dance and party with her girlfriends. That's what she does. I don't find that to be low-life behavior at all. Although, yeah, she comes home at 3 a.m., and I saw some creep drop her off. But I said to her, you're not, you know, going around on me. And she said, no, 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 no. She said that that was some bum that she met, but she needed a ride home, and it gave her the creeps getting a ride from the guy. But what's she gonna do? You know?
Well, that doesn't sound very intelligent, if you ask me.
No one's asking you.
You're saying to Phil, no one's asking him. You just said your wife took a ride from a creep.
Exactly. She took a ride from a creep, and I said to her, what are you doing? And she said, well, you know, I had to get... What's this all about, anyway?
All right, let's get it off of your personal life. I think we brought your wife up. That's a bad idea. You've worked with addicts, one of whom was your wife. Most of them are morally good people. They are responsible people. They love their families, love their children, love their wives, love their mates. And when they get involved with drugs, it's when their lives begin to fall apart. But you're not talking about a character failing with most addicts, are you?
Well, absolutely not, Phil. You're talking about people who have just simply been swept up in the biochemical vortex of a swirling vortex of destruction that is... the biochemistry that contributes to the addiction problem. In other words, you're a good person, but you have, if you want to call it an allergy, you can call it an allergy. You can call it a weakness, like diabetes, like too much blood sugar, like insulin not producing enough. There's all kinds of physical illnesses that we have that will affect how we live, and addiction is no different. If you have a biochemical weakness, in the case of my wife, that just ain't that's not it. You know, she's just a real, and I love her, and I think she's a wonderful woman. Believe me when I tell you, she's a fantastic woman. She is simply the scum of the earth if she gets around the wrong people.
Now, what about the fact that some bum dropped her off?
Well, wait a minute. Why are we talking about my wife?
You brought her up.
You just brought her up. You know, Sadler, you've got to remember who you are, the one that brought her up.
Could you not call me Sadler, if it's all right?
Well, you brought her up. All right, hold on.
No, just don't call me Sadler, okay? Shaw.
I'm a United States Army general.
Well, you can be I don't care if you're a Cub Scout leader, you know?
All right, gentlemen, that's fine. That's enough. You know, let's have the respect that we should have and call people by their... a first name. Let's be friendly about this. Why are we at each other's throats? I have no idea.
On account of the fact the guy called his wife a lowlife.
Hey, what did I say about that guy? When I hear that guy's voice, in that guy's voice, I can hear a metal plate in his head. You understand? So,
all right, bud, for the last time, shut up or I'll just send you home tonight. I mean, I'll kick you out of here and you're going home. Okay, so what are the solutions to... If you don't want to talk about your wife, don't bring her up.
I brought her up only in passing as a way to illustrate the question, you know, the answer to the question. You know, if someone is a drug addict, then is it a moral failing or are they simply biochemically degraded or degraded? That's all.
All right, let's go to Roy here in Boston, Massachusetts, listening to us tonight. Roy, you're on the Phil Henry Show with... you're on the Phil Henry Show here with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead.
Oh, hello, Dr. Sadler. Nice to talk with you.
All right.
Well, Dr. Sadler, I don't have a specific question about addiction. I just wanted to call in and thank you for the great work that you're doing and the great work that you your wife is doing in this regard. I think the two of you are a credit to the world of recovering addicts.
My wife is not doing... Thank you very much.
His wife is not doing anything. His wife's an addict.
Yeah, my wife's an addict, so she's not...
All right, I understand. What I wanted to tell you is to thank you, because at one time I myself was a morphine abuser. I had become addicted after I had been in the hospital in the Army, and I was given morphine for pain. And I'd had a major surgery done, a kidney surgery, and they'd given me morphine. And I became a morphine addict for some 5 years. And I was about as low as you could get, believe me, in my life. So People like your wife and yourself?
My wife hasn't done anything. I've done things. My wife hasn't done anything.
Okay, I apologize.
His wife was an addict. Is she still an addict?
Well, I'd rather not comment on that. But yes. But I'd rather not comment on it.
Well, I understand. I was an addict for some 5 years after I got out of the Army. I hooked on morphine, and then I did move on to... Then I got hooked on methadone for a while, if you believe that. But I'm so grateful that there were people there for me. So if you wouldn't mind to thank... Okay, I won't thank your wife, but I do thank you and the great work that you have done to save addicts.
Well, I appreciate that very much, sir, and continued success to you.
Well, I'm going to try, and I'll take another run at it.
Are you using again?
I am. Yes, I am. But I'm taking another run at it tonight after hearing the broadcast.
Wait a minute. You are currently using addictive drugs.
I am, Phil. Yes, I am. I took 5 years I used, and then I got clean, but I'm back on it now. But I'm going to take another run at it. Because I've been listening to the great stories here from Dr. Sadler, and certainly the great inspiration his wife is.
My wife hasn't done anything. My wife hasn't done anything. My wife hasn't done anything. You understand?
Okay. Yes. All right. Well.
All right. Thank you very much, and thank you, Dr. Sadler, for being with us. We are going to take a break and come back here on the other side of the news with more of this marvelousness. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com, online at philhenryshow.com, and tune in.
These callers that you had tonight.
Hey, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. All right, all of that nonsense, and I say nonsense with all due respect, out of the way.
Well, Phil, you can't call something like that nonsense.
No, but that ridiculous jackass doctor. I shouldn't say jackass, but...
Well, you're the guy that booked him, Phil.
Yeah, I booked him because usually we have him on the program to talk about. The whole thing, get out of here with him and his wife, too. Whatever's going on, Dr. Sadler, with you and your wife, I would appreciate if you'd work that out first before you come back on the program, okay? You love her, you need her, you can't live without her, and she's the scum of the earth, and some creep dropped her off. I don't know, man. And it sounds to me like she's still got a problem with the addiction thing. The other news this weekend, just as sad, more sordid, far, far seedier, and the whole creep factor on this one just goes off the charts, and that's the... And I don't want to get into it at all, do you understand? But that's the whole Woody Allen controversy erupting yet again.
Well, I think, and I'd just like to say one thing, if you wouldn't mind, Phil.
You better watch out.
What do you mean, watch out? What do you have to say about this?
Hold on, Phil. Now, don't let her open her big bazoo.
I beg your pardon.
Hold on, Margaret. There's no need to comment on that story at all. Do you understand?
I just want to say, I still think his movies are great. Is there something wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. No, there's nothing wrong with that. His movies are great. His movies are great, okay? And there's an argument that has been waged for as long, I guess, as mankind has been on this planet, which is the argument having to do with judging a man or a woman by their works, by their lives. Sometimes their lives and their works do not match. Sometimes the greatness that they leave us does not is something that rises far above what they were able to achieve as individuals. We have that example time and again. All kinds of people. If you want to hail Woody Allen's movies, that's great. I know there's a few of his movies that I really like. There's a few of Roman Polanski's movies that I like. You know.
Well, which ones are Roman Polanski? What did he do?
Roman Polanski had a teenager.
Oh, yeah, well.
No, not well anything. The kid was 14. Come on, will you?
I understand that, but Roman Polanski's work has been very, very important. Now, Phil.
Hold on, Margaret. Am I to understand that you, a mother and a woman, are saying that Roman Polanski is somehow escapes the critical eye of this issue? Because you, in all of your high and mighty media connections and the entertainment reportage that you deem so important...
Get a load of you.
I'm not done yet. The high and mighty reportage that you deem so important that supersedes the damage that guy, that Polensky creep, that little... No, baby.
Look, I'm not saying that what Roman did is right. I'm not saying that what Roman did is to be praised. I think Roman... You know, Phil, when I think of Roman...
Wait. Hold the phone. Roman, is it? Well...
Excuse me, but... In the entertainment business, we often refer to each other... Oh, God. You don't refer to people as their first name.
Not people I don't know. No, I don't.
You... Oh, please. Yes, of course you do. Don't you call him Howard?
Howard Stern?
Yes.
Yeah, I've met Howard Stern. I know Howard Stern.
Well, get a load of you. Aren't you a big shot?
Yeah, Margaret, don't you know Mr. Henry knows Mr. Stern?
What are you all of a sudden? What are you, a stumbling, muttering clown? What are you, Billy Bibbit?
Hold on. Now, you can say what you'd like. I just thought that I would point out to the assembled that the use of the man's first name seems a bit affected, if you'll pardon me.
Affected? Or were you going to say affected? See, I know when you're about to insult me.
Affected?
Yes, that is an ass that's affected, as opposed to just a normal person who is putting it on. And then needs to be slapped back into a sense of themselves, and they're fine. But affected is an ass, a full-on ass that is affected and cannot, for the life of anyone, have their face slapped back into a sense of themselves and some dignity.
I have no idea what the woman just said. Boy, it pisses me off, though.
I can tell, because your voice just cracked.
Oh, it did. Yes, it did. So more water for the... For the general.
Now go get you a cup of water, General.
Thank you very much. Roman Polanski has made great movies. I will tell you that my favorite Roman Polanski movie is probably The Pianist.
Would you say that better so that people don't think you're...
No, I don't have to say it better. P-I-A-N-I-S-T, Pianist.
Well, it sounds like penis to me, and I'm getting water over here.
Nobody's asking you, man.
Well, I think you should. If Dickman, even with the plate in his head, is mishearing it.
What?
Well, I think he should be able to hear it clearly, given the fact that part of his head is made out of aluminum.
Aluminum?
Or whatever they made it out of.
Would you get him his water, please?
I'm getting it.
Hey, Mr. Henry, I've been kind of silent tonight. I want to weigh in on this.
Of course, Robert, go ahead.
Excuse me, I'll... Of course, Robert, go ahead.
Thank you. Now, I think that these topics are very important. I know drug addictions are important. I know that the topic of Woody Allen's important. I think we should stay as far away from that as possible and do some other topics. I just don't think this is doing us any good talking about this. Very sad, very tragic. And got the Chris Brown story that I got for you. Here's a guy that was an escaped murderer. That's kind of interesting. And here's another story here about a woman. She dismembered her 32-year-old son.
All right. Thank you very much, Robert.
What's wrong with that?
Well, how does that make it better than what we've been talking about?
Because nobody knows who the guy is. You're not going to talk about somebody that's tragic, something that's bad and bloody. This guy got dismembered, man. You wouldn't know this guy from any other dismembered body.
That's fine, but it doesn't make it any less gruesome. Let me just say, I think you made a very good point, Robert, but let me just say...
Thank you.
What are you doing?
I gave the general some water.
I've got some water. Is there a problem with that?
There's no problem with it. I wish that water would do some good, because your voice just... now it's a regular occurrence of the show, that cracking voice. I think this is a very good point that Robert raises. These are issues that are serious, and to bring on Dr. Sadler to talk about addiction when his own wife is a morphine addict or whatever that was.
Well, it was the one caller was a morphine addict.
Yeah, the guy who called in from Boston.
Right, but his wife as well, Dr. Sadler said, had a substance abuse problem that predated their marriage, and she's still hanging around with creeps, and he considered her to be morally degenerate, which is not what we're talking about here when we talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman, not at all. Then we move on to the Woody Allen case, and that's just flat ugly, any which way you look at it. I can't, for the life of me... See, one of the things that I got a problem with is the
young lady in this situation saying the things that she's said, remembering the things she's remembered, making the statement she's made, and they're doing the same thing to her that they do to a lot of these young people. They're telling them they're mistaken. They're telling them that they're wrong, and they're telling them that, you know, they're not remembering it right. So, you know, I think that that's a destructive thing to do.
Well, we weren't talking about that, though. We were talking about Woody Allen's great films and whether or not you feel that they are, that they still rise to the level of the genius that I think we all agree that they do, except for you. You haven't weighed in on this.
So what? How do you weigh in on that, Phil?
I weigh in on Woody Allen's movies the way I always have. Some of them I like, you know.
Well, you've said some. Which ones specifically? I've got to know. Because if any of the films that you like that Woody Allen did have anything to do with little, well...
with little kids.
Don't start judging me. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite movies, and yeah, it has a little girl in it, and quite frankly, and now I look back on the relationship he has with this little girl, and I'm wondering, what is Manhattan, you know?
Oh, man, Manhattan, you kidding me, that little girl in that movie?
I think that kid in that movie is like his niece or something, isn't she?
Whatever.
Well, there was I like Manhattan. That was the first time I ever saw Meryl Streep on screen. Meryl Streep in that movie, man, I thought she was gorgeous. I never saw a woman so beautiful in my life when I saw Meryl Streep in Manhattan.
Who are you talking about?
Meryl Streep.
And who's this?
You ever heard of Meryl Streep?
I've heard. Is that Merle?
Merle?
Well, that's the one that they were pointing out to me.
The name's pronounced Merle.
All right.
Broadway Danny Rose was funny to me. The Hannah and Her Sisters, I liked. Crimes and Misdemeanors, I thought was fantastic. You know, I mean, what do you want me to say? Yeah, there's some good ones. Roman Polanski, I liked The Pianist from Polanski. I thought Bitter Moon was really a great film, a pretty devastating movie, but really great. People like, you know, Rosemary's Baby. Yeah, okay, sure, great, fantastic, whatever. I don't know. Chinatown, to me, will always be the greatest Roman Polanski movie I ever saw.
Now, what? Chinatown? I've never heard of that one.
What's that?
You never heard of Chinatown? That's about one of the... It's considered one of the greatest screenplays ever written. Chinatown, Jack Nicholson?
Oh, yeah, is that the one with the Chinese woman, right?
What Chinese woman?
The film with Jack Nicholson... And the other, the Chinese actress.
There's no Chinese, not the star.
Yes, the hell there wasn't. There was a Chinese woman in that film, as God is my witness.
Well, yeah, there was a Chinese woman. She was the maid.
No, I'm not talking about the maid.
Faye Dunaway is not Chinese.
Well, then why did she look Chinese?
I think it's the makeup.
You're talking about the makeup in a couple of scenes where they purposely made her look Asian. She's not... Faye Dunaway's not Asian.
All right, well, she did look Chinese to me. Or maybe not, or Korean.
Yeah, there you go. She was Korean.
Really?
No, not really. No, she wasn't Chinese. So that, to me, was one of the greatest movies ever made. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and we'll get into this story that Robert wanted us to get into, the Michigan mother charged with dismembering the body of a 32-year-old son, and also just some Phil Henry Show news that we want to get front and center about the website and about future live performances of our one-man thing. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Well, just so we're all clear, I guess we're all clear, while we did lose our feed of the Super Bowl last night, so we did not have any Super Bowl here at the El Pacifico because we have Time Warner Cable, and, well, hell, it went out. And I like Time Warner Cable qualifying it by saying, you know, most of our customers have high definition, and we only lost it for the other... Time Warner, your service is noted across the width and the breadth of this land as being substandard. So your excuses about high def versus something else, your service to your customers is lousy. You lost this customer. I'm going to DirecTV, and I'm not getting paid to say this. This is, and here's one of the reasons why I say what I say. You know, as I said once before on a pre-show, and I might have said it on the air, but it bears repeating, some people say, well, there's Phil Henry throwing his quote, media weight around. I'm telling you that for every one of me, there are I don't know how many hundreds of other people that don't have any voice at all, have lousy service, get short shrift by the people at work at customer service, get some run around by some tech that comes out to their house, and, you know, so that when I say something about the lousy, crappy service that they give, I'm speaking on behalf of a hell of a lot of people who nobody is listening to, you know, and that's why I do it. I'm not expecting any good service from Time Warner Cable. I'm gone. I'm leaving their company. I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to be using their service any longer. But what I am saying is there are still people that are going to be, you know, accessing your so-called service, Time Warner. So you guys might want to kick it up another 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 notches, because I'm telling you, if somebody wanted me to list all the things that I've been through with you guys, it would be a long list, and all of this stuff backed up by other people. I mean, we've seen it all. And yesterday, for you guys to lose the for you guys to lose the Super Bowl, I mean, it's a big event, man. Tens of millions of people watch the Super Bowl. It's the biggest television event, arguably, in the broadcast year. I mean, sure, there may be some events here and there that get bigger ratings, but it is on average probably the biggest television event we have. And you guys losing it—that's about as big a screw up as can possibly happen if you're in the business of delivering this kind of stuff. So, you know, pull it together, man. Sack up, and I don't know. Do better, Jack, you know.
Bear down.
Yeah, bear down, man.
Bear down. Isn't that what you said someone said in a baseball game and they got thrown out?
Yeah, well, Pete Rose said that one time and got pitched.
Yeah, yeah. So if I suppose if I was in a baseball game and Time Warner was the umpire and I told him to bear down, I guess they'd... Why would he get thrown out for that?
Well, that... I don't know either.
If you tell a guy to bear down, you're either involved in a very intimate act with... Well...
Would you not talk about... Are you kidding?
Yeah, where do you come from that?
What do you mean, where am I coming from? You're telling a guy to bear down? Is that what you're doing?
I'm not telling a guy anything. Some guy got thrown out of a baseball game by telling the umpire to bear down.
Yeah, it does sound kind of dirty.
Oh, get out of here, will you? I think the reason why he got thrown out of the game is he was essentially telling the umpire... You're not concentrating. You're not even in the game. You're not thinking. I mean, it was a clearly insulting and it was a slap to the authority of the umpire. I don't know why umpires throw guys out of games any more than perhaps I know why referees would throw a football player out of a game. But in baseball, there is a very definite line between the participant and the official who's the umpire, and there's respect that needs to be given. There is a certain amount of protesting that you're allowed as a player or as a manager, and then you draw the line, you're not allowed to do it anymore. There's a certain way that you should talk to the umpire. You get personal and they'll throw you out, you know. So
you're saying there's a protocol, there's a sort of there's an Emily Post?
Not Emily Post, but there is a protocol, yeah. There's in baseball, you can argue a call, but you can't get personal. I think they draw the line at the four-letter words, especially if you call the umpire a four-letter word. Maybe not so much the four-letter word, but it's the personalization of it. You can't go on and on and on and on and on. Some umps will allow you to argue a point when, if they think you got it coming. Like, well, it was a close call. Let this guy scream his guts loose and then tell him to shut up and go back to the dugout. And I think at that point, you're supposed to shut up and go back to the dugout. If you don't, then you get pitched.
What kind of four-letter word are they going to let you say?
Well, they don't let you say four-letter word. You can't call the umpire a dirty MF-er. Or your mother blanks, blanks in hell. You can't, do you think you'd be able to get away with that?
Your mother blanks, blanks in hell. You're saying that to who?
You're saying that to the umpire.
Well, there's an awful lot of vulgarity in baseball. I would imagine that goes along with it.
No, that doesn't go, no. No, are you kidding?
Am I kidding about what?
You're going to say to an umpire, your mother blanks, blanks in hell, and I'm going to stay in the game?
Well, it seems kind of petty.
Well, you can't take too many things personally, Sammy.
If you're an umpire and you are trying to maintain your authority in a baseball game, and a guy wants to protest a call, he wants to argue a call, hey, that strike was, you call it a strike, I think it was outside, you know, and okay, so you're entitled. But if you turn around and look at the umpire and say that your mother blank blanks in hell, I think the game, that's it, man. You have just gotten yourself.
You say that the umpire going to be that petty.
Petty? I wouldn't call that petty at all. I would say that player has just stepped over the line into personal assault and affront, and he brought his mother into it? You're kidding.
Then I'm confused. That sounds like standard baseball chatter.
It is, Phil, to a degree. Don't you agree? To say that an umpire's mother is doing this or that to the...
No, man, that's not standard baseball chatter.
Talk about a guy's mother.
Yeah, you talk about a guy's mother. Guy's the umpire in the game. And you got to talk about what?
What?
What was the thing you just said?
If you say to an umpire, yeah, your mother's in hell servicing a variety of demons. And I know it sounds bad, but it's sort of comic, isn't it?
No, that's not comic.
You don't think so?
No, of course I don't think so. You don't get it, Margaret, because you're not a player, you know. What if that was one of your sons, and your son was an umpire in a game?
Yeah.
And some guy turned around and said, your mother is servicing the Legion in hell.
Well, my son wouldn't be an umpire, Phil. He'd be a player. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what Mr. Henry's saying.
I know what Mr. Henry's saying. Look, bud. Don't get between a dog and its meat, and you're really starting to... You're really chapping my hide.
What?
All right. No, you can't do that. An umpire's going to throw your ass out bigger than you know what if you start getting personal like that. How we got into this, you know...
Well, you're just simply talking about the authority that an umpire has, and I think
Slow down.
You have to balance your authority with good humor...
Yeah, so the guy said, your mama, she's in hell right now, giving it up for Lucifer, and when she's done with him, he's going to untie her from the bit.
Will you cut it out, man? There's no guy that's going to protest a call in baseball and go into a big, long thing like that. Or maybe not, I don't know.
Well, it's a goofy game. It's a real goofy, goofy, goofball kind of a thing, isn't it? And the reason why we're talking about baseball is because football is over, and no one cares about hockey. No one cares about basketball. No one really cares about life in February, do they? Someone was talking about Punxsutawney Phil or...
Punxsutawney Phil, that's the groundhog.
Oh, well, whatever. You know, I can't wait for the baseballs to start and the different baseball games.
Yeah, all right. We'll be right back. Phil Henry's show with more on the Michigan mother and her 32-year-old son with no head. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, online at philhenryshow.com, and tune in. And also, you can listen to a free live stream of our show on our website, and it is mobile. So if you go to philhenryshow.com, you're on your mobile phone, you can check out our show live every night, 7 to 10 on the Pacific Coast, 10 to 1 on the East Coast, by way of accessing our website, our mobile site at philhenryshow.com. Or if you'd like, you can go to TuneIn. Or if you'd like, you can just listen to the podcast the next day, but you have to be a Backstage Pass subscriber to do that. Had a fantastic meeting today with a variety of principals, and we're going to continue our live shows into the spring. I will give you an announcement as to our next date, but it's going to be in Southern California. It will be in the Los Angeles area, and very, very much looking forward to that. So we're off and running, if you will, and how many single dates, one-man shows we do this year will depend as we move through this process. Boy, look at Eric Roberts, will you?
Yeah, he just kind of looks bad.
Eric Roberts, the actor, terrific actor, Eric Roberts, is on CNN right now, and now this is a cat that was...
Yes, Eric Roberts is recovering heroin user.
I don't know, you know. I'm not afraid of needles, but...
Well, I would think that's kept a lot of people from being heroin users, the fact they're just afraid of needles.
Yeah, and you can snort it, though.
All right, I take that back.
All right. In any event, that'll be fun. So let's get off the idea of... Let's forget about all the bad stuff, and let's talk about good things. Me on stage making money.
Yay.
Thank you. All right, mother charged with dismembering body of 32-year-old son, a registered nurse in southeastern Michigan. Good evening, everybody. I'm Phil Hendry. A registered nurse in southeastern Michigan dismembered her 32-year-old son's body and dumped the parts along several area roadways.
Well, did she kill him?
No, they're not saying she killed him. Her name is Donna Scrivo. She was charged with the dismemberment, disinterment, and mutilation of the body of her dead son, Ramsey, and the unlawful removal of the corpse. These charges that were brought are not the end of the case. We're still working diligently on a murder investigation. Uh-oh. Scrivo was arraigned at St. Clair Shores District Court. This is in Michigan. On Monday, where bond was set at $100,000, she's scheduled to be back in court on February the 14th. Police found garbage bags containing body... oh, boy, body parts on Thursday after a resident spotted them strewn along two roads in China Township, a small community of the Great Lakes region northeast of Detroit. Authorities also found body parts nearby that were not in bags, as well as a bag full of clothes and charred paperwork, and they... The Free Press reported that a Macomb County probate court in 2013 had granted Donna Scrivo a petition to care for Ramsey, who was suicidal and suffered from paranoia and delusional thoughts. So what in the hell?
You know, I shouldn't say this, but Michigan, Wisconsin, these areas that are evidencing what I call the new American Gothic sensibility. You know, I feel as if there's a novel. I think there's a book in this. I really do. I feel a novel welling up inside of me, you know?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, Bud, that I feel the need to put pen to paper on this gothic, the emergence of a new sort of horror gothic from the northern northwest of our country, you know?
That ain't the northwest. That's the Midwest.
It's the old North. Would you be quiet, please?
Bud, would you let her finish?
Yeah, she's got it all wrong.
Bud, the old Northwest of America was, in point of fact, what today you would call the Upper Midwest. But it was, in fact, the old Northwest. Now, if you look at old books...
Oh, who cares, ma'am? Talking about all this kind of gothic stuff.
I'm sorry, Robert, if you don't understand what I'm trying to say. I'm saying that there is, in our country today, a feeling of horror. Horror. You know what I mean, Phil?
Horror.
No. Pronounce it properly. As Marlon Brando said in Apocalypse Now, the horror. Do you remember when he said that?
I do remember Apocalypse Now. That's a movie that rubs me the wrong way, thank you very much. That Brando made a great many great career officers of the United States Army look like nuts. They looked like we needed a... He made all of us look like we needed a butterfly net. And I can assure you, I didn't take kindly to it.
But you must admit, General, the brilliance of that film.
I wouldn't wipe with it. I wouldn't wipe with it, with Marlon Brando. I wouldn't wipe with all of Brando. And I know that he's dead. God rest his soul. But I wouldn't wipe with what's left of him.
All right. There's no need to start bad-mouthing people, especially when they're not here. And I don't want to get into a whole review of Apocalypse Now. You understand it's a movie about Vietnam. The general is a veteran.
Well, I know that he's a veteran, but surely, General, you must understand the greatness of Brando's performance when he went, Bahamran.
What's wrong with your lower lip, please? Because
I don't think there's anything wrong. I think there's a certain way of pronouncing words that...
A certain way of... You mean the right way?
Well, Margaret, the word is horror. I don't know what you mean by horror. What is that?
That is the actual King's English hello of the way it's pronounced.
Well, guess what? There's no king no more. This is America, where they don't have a king. We do it. If you want to do a way of pronouncing it, it's the president's way.
What?
Never mind. It's an old saying, Bud, the king's English. That's all. It just means speaking proper English. All right. So what about the horror?
I'm just saying that the upper Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, whatever's up there, Minnesota, certain parts of Minnesota... There is a gothic horror sensibility that sends a chill down my spine. It sends a bead of sweat to my brow. It sends...
Yes?
I'm going to kick... Hey! Kick your ass.
Watch it, Bud. Why do you do that?
You know, Bud, you know what's going to send gas into your lower colon?
What? Some of your cooking?
You know what? I'm...
Let go of him, Margaret.
I'll kill him.
Let go of him, Margaret.
Oh, I barely touched you.
Hey, Bud, why don't you go and get the general some more water, huh? What do you think?
You don't need any water, do you, General?
Well, I think I might.
Okay. So this woman is, well, there's a real gothic thing going on. There's no question about that. She's nuts, man. She's all messed up. What do you think?
I think she probably killed him, man. Said he was suicidal.
Apparently, the guy, whatever the hell his name is here, this Randall, apparently he was suicidal. Ramsey was his name, and was paranoid. Do you think that it was one of those mercy killings that she just killed him and then tried to just get rid of the bodies? You know, I saw a thing here on TV not too long ago that was really out there. There's a guy, and the story goes like this. This guy was taking care of these two women who were sick. And one was a mother, the other was a daughter.
Oh, was this on the Investigation Discovery?
Yeah, yeah. And so he's taking care of them as they are gradually going downhill. Both of these women are not doing well. And they both eventually die. Now, he didn't kill them, but what he did do is he covered up their death. So when they died, this guy knew that they were getting, you know, Social Security checks.
Oh, and so this clown kept cashing them.
Yeah, this guy had some kind of power of attorney for both of them. So when these women died, and he was when they were alive, he was using the money to support them and to get them food and to take care of them. And when they died, he just didn't say anything to anybody. He kept on going out to the mailbox, getting the checks, going inside the house, dropping off groceries, making it look like they were there. And I want to say this went on for years. I mean, this guy was a real kook, man. You got to be some kind of a kook. I mean, you got to be real kooky, baby. You know, Robert?
Yeah, I know. I mean, what do you mean kooky?
Well, I mean, you know, we use the word psychopath, which means no empathy. And I think you have to be that way to let something like this happen, you know, just to have two dead bodies. And all you can think of is the profit motive. And apparently these bodies, and here's the thing that was really kind of creepy about it. The room that the women were in, and they were both in the same room in separate beds, apparently was dry enough. And it was just the right climate that the bodies did not decompose, they mummified.
Oh, God, this is creepy, Phil.
Well, I mean, I'm telling you the story. This is what happened. And it actually helped the authorities, when they finally did get into the house and see what the hell is going on here, it helped the authorities actually determine date of death and everything because of, well, I better not get into it.
Yeah, on account of the insects and everything.
Oh, would you shut up?
Boy, that, yeah, bud.
Boy, that gives me the creeps, Jack.
Well?
But that was it. That's true. I mean, that's how they... this whole idea of forensic etymology, I think, is what they call it, where there is a study of insects as it pertains to the time and the place, as well as the season of a crime. Because you find these remains that have been out for years. Years! And you have no idea when the... You know that remains are skeletonized, and so you know that it takes a certain amount of time for that to happen, but you don't really, you can't pinpoint the season. And they now are able to do that using the insects in the area. And so this was weird. I can't even imagine a guy needing money that bad that you go through this weird, this weird charade of pretending like there's two women alive in a house, when in point of fact, every time you bring the groceries into the kitchen, you know there's two dead bodies in there.
See, that's the part I wouldn't be able to handle, knowing that there are two dead bodies in there while I'm making a casserole or whatever. You know, did he close the door? I'd have to do something like that while I was cooking.
What are you cooking for?
What are you cooking for?
I've got to make it look real, don't I?
Well, but Margaret, you don't have to actually cook, you know.
Well, if I go in there with the groceries, I'm going to want to at least turn the stove on and do some light dusting or something.
You got dead bodies in there, right?
I know that. I'm the one that brought that up.
How are you going to cook?
By turning the stove on.
Wow. Well, I mean, how are you going to cook and eat whatever it is you're cooking?
Well, if you're going to cook it, you might as... What is up with you people? You're looking at me like I'm some sort of thing.
Well, you just said you give you the creeps. Now you're seeing able to eat.
Well, don't go screeching, bud. You're like, nothing's going to eat.
Margaret, you're the one that said that it would give you the creeps. Now you're saying you're bringing groceries into the kitchen. Oh, hell, I don't know how I do it as I'm cooking the casserole. What are you eating, anyway?
All right, suppose I had a Stouffer's stovetop frozen, one of the frozen dinners. I just put it in, and I lightly browned it.
What about it?
Forget it. Hey, Margaret, can you get me water?
Yes.
You need water, General?
Well, what do you think?
Yeah. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Thank you so very, very deeply there, General, for that. And we'll come back with more of our news. PhilHenryShow.com is right now featuring a special for you. It's kind of our Valentine's Month special. If you buy a year's subscription, you get 1 year free as a gift subscription for your Valentine. So I think it's worth it. Check it out at PhilHenryShow.com, a gift subscription for your Valentine when you buy a year's subscription. Now through the 15th of February, day after Valentine's Day at PhilHenryShow.com. It's world famous Phil Henry Show, PhilHenryShow.com. There is an autopsy planned, I guess, for today. When I say today, I mean today, East Coast time, on the body of Philip Seymour Hoffman, and there'll be more, and more news on the cause of the poor man's passing. But there was some reporting that the heroin that causes death is a particularly potent kind of heroin. It does contain an opiate that is traditionally used to ease the pain of cancer patients. And has a very, very obviously strong effect on the physiology of the person that's using it. So or on the physical chemistry of the person using it. So that's something they're looking at. But nonetheless, this is a tragedy of drug addiction. I want to say Margaret and General Shaw and Bud and Robert, that the, as I've said so many times, the pharmacology, when I say that word pharmacology, the drugs that are being developed, we know more about the human brain today than we ever have. We know more about what the biochemistry and the neurotransmitters of the human brain can do. And the thing that's kind of interesting is that when you talk to people about the fact that we really are talking about a physical problem and a biochemical problem, and some people really want to hold on to the belief that it's a character failing, and they want to hold on to the belief that it's a moral failing, and they want to hold on to the belief that it's they want to blame the user. I'm not saying that the user shouldn't be blamed to a point, but the whole physical aspect of this thing is overlooked by a lot of people. You know?
Well, I think a lot of people, and I know Frank Gray is on the line. Ladies and gentlemen, Frank is a very dear friend of Phil's. He's my husband. He's over at Channel 19, I think, where Don Berman has just gotten done interviewing you, Frank. I know that as a producer, you've seen an awful lot of artists go down this road, haven't you?
I have, and I would take exception, Phil. As much as I admire you, I want to believe that just like Dr. Sadler, when she was talking about her wife and what her wife went through being a moral degenerate, I felt very close to doctors. I don't mean close in a sense that you and most likely Dickman are thinking of.
Well, what does that mean? I know what you mean by close.
Well, then I should say Dickman. She's always... You know,
I didn't say anything about anything.
You know, Frank, just stick to the point, Frank.
All right, I just thought that Dickman would probably be giggling her fool head off when I said being close to another guy. But I have felt that what Sadler said was true, that there are people using drugs that have a moral degeneracy and a moral failing that needs to be pointed out. Now, as a producer in the television field, in the arts and sciences of the film and motion picture and television producing, of the arts and sciences of the film, of the television and motion picture.
Arts and sciences, yes, we know what you're saying.
Yeah, as a producer in the arts and sciences of the television.
You're just going to keep on going in that loop.
I'm sorry. All right, can I just... One more... I just want to wrap it up.
Go ahead.
As a producer in the field of the arts and sciences of the television and motion picture arts and science...
Frank, give it up, will you, Frank?
I don't want to give up. As a producer in the field of arts and sciences of television and movie and the arts and sciences... See, that sounds retarded.
And please don't use the word retarded either.
Okay, so in other words, I've got all kinds of rules and regulations that have been slapped down. I feel like I've been slapped down.
Do you not want to comment on the story?
I do want to comment on it, Phil, but I think a story like this, I need freedom to comment as I will. And as a producer in the arts and sciences of the motion picture and the television, the arts and the sciences of the motion picture.
You know, what do you want me to do?
Frank, would you give it up before someone hangs up on you?
I have known a great many artists that have used drugs. I knew one of the finest actors, a guy by the name of Jimmy Carlisle, and she was earmarked for greatness. She was fantastic. She played the rough, rugged, tough Western hero, and we always liked her for those roles. And she always got the girl, and you'd see her riding off into the sunset with the girl sitting on the back of the horse. And the love scenes between her and the actresses that we paired her up with were really hot. I mean, super, super steamy hot. And Jimmy was all man. She was just all man. When she took her shirt off for certain scenes, you know, she had a hairy chest and back, and that kind of turned off the studio. But we told the studio, look, she's exactly what women are looking for. And so they said, oh, okay, you know what's best, Frank, and we've never gone wrong with Frank Gray. She's always steered us in the right direction, and there's no reason why she can't spot a great Western hero when she sees one, especially someone like Jimmy Carlisle, and we know that she knows her, and the two of them have lunch together. Now,
all right, hold on for just a moment, Frank, okay?
I'm just getting to the good part.
Can't take it, huh?
No, I can't take it. I can't. And I think the audience is sitting scratching their heads and anything else they scratch, and they're saying, what's the story with Frank Gray with his gender confusion, ladies and gentlemen?
Well, but, get rid of the gender confusion and just go right to the essence of what Frank was saying there. And Frank was saying that great young artists are cut down in the prime by the scourge of drug addiction.
Well, of course they are. I mean, how many times are we going to say it? How many times do you need to say it? How many times do you need to say, well, there goes another one, and there goes another, and boy, and then go through the same old stupid arguments about how, well, they're, you know, what a scumbag. I mean, the Philip Seymour Hoffman hate, man, that it didn't take long for that to come out.
Well, I did see a lot of that.
A lot of it? Good God almighty. By mid-afternoon, the haters were out, and the garbage that was being dumped on him was... was unending. So, and again, I'm not trying to tell anybody what to think or feel. God knows. All I'm asking people to consider is that there is a physical component to this that has nothing to do with one's morality, one's responsibility, one's love of one's family, nothing. It is a terribly, terribly, it's in its essence, ultimately, a very, very physical illness, and has to be dealt with that way. All right, we're going to take a break and be back for our final hour here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Did you hear about the guy that's been that was at sea for a year?
Yeah, it's bullcrap.
You think it's bullcrap? We'll talk about it when we come back. Phil Henry Show. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. By the way, this music you're listening to is the music of Anthrax, and Scott Ian will be Bobby Dooley's guest in a future Bobby Dooley podcast, the Bobby Dooley podcast, and Bobby Dooley's available as of today with a new episode 55 of the Bobby Dooley podcast. I think she's talking about what, Margaret?
Well, she's talking about a Super Bowl party and some biker and...
And what?
Well, I don't want to say it on the air. It's rather disgusting, to be honest with you.
Talking about the guys.
No, don't say it.
Yes, well, she was talking about the guys, and then going out into the garage with the guy and then taking off in his motorcycle.
Well, they had a Super Bowl party at the Dooley's. Okay. And I think that had to do with the size of someone's...
Well, don't say it, Phil.
Television, I was going to say. The size of a guy's television. The wide... Actually, it was a woman.
Yes, it was one of her circle of taste. Some of these nattering, those women and their circle of taste, They've got all the taste, I think, of Ben Fagan in Oliver. You know, the dirty, filthy old pederast. What are you looking at, bud?
Ben Fagan.
In Oliver Twist, the dirty old man.
All right.
You know, I love working with people that read.
All right. Well, I think the point is made that she has no taste. Okay. So welcome back here, folks, to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Yeah, the Super Bowl was, forget about whether or not we actually watched it. The good news is there wasn't much to miss because, man, was that a rout. Woo, baby. And to join us and talk a little bit about the ball game, we had him on, of course, on Friday talking about what he thought would happen, and by God, it did happen. Doug Danger has joined us here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We also will have Vernon Dozier back in, and Steve Bozell, you know, Bud, you guys got preempted because of the Time Warner failing. But Doug Danger joining us online. Doug, you predicted a 50-10 score in favor of the Seahawks. It was 43-8.
When I talk about being a gay man and a gay journalist and having the perception and ability to look into a certain set of circumstances based upon the fact that I had been discriminated against, and therefore I have sharpened or honed my ability to look into a situation, I felt I was on very, very firm ground when I predicted that the Seahawks would wipe the floor up with the Denver Broncos, and I was very, very right about that. From the beginning, I felt that the Seattle Seahawks had it in them to make this a memorable Super Bowl, but more to the point, I felt they had it in them to humiliate and to take, I'm second to none in my admiration for Peyton Manning. I think he's obviously an all-star quarterback, and this is the guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame, there's no question about that, and he's a guy that is going to be hailed for years to come as one of the greats, right up there with Montana, right up there with Unitas, right up there with all of the great quarterbacks. But in this football game yesterday, there's no question in my mind that the Seahawks were going to go into that stadium and they were going to make it their personal business to wipe and clean every filthy nook and cranny of MetLife Stadium with Peyton Manning, using every portion of him to wipe and mop up and sop up the filth of that place, just to prove a point.
Now, you sound as if you enjoyed seeing Peyton Manning get beaten badly, because I don't hear in you the voice of someone who is admiring Peyton Manning.
Well, now, wait a minute.
No, I've got to agree with that.
Now, hold on.
I do, too.
Well, what do you mean you do, too?
It sounds like you're glorying in Peyton Manning losing as bad as he did.
I don't know where you're getting that.
Well, you're talking about them wiping up every filthy nook and cranny.
Well, that was the Seattle Seahawks. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. You're aware of that, right? Right, Margaret?
Yes, I'm aware of it, Doug, obviously. But you're talking about mopping the filth up at MetLife Stadium with Peyton, every inch of Peyton Manning. That doesn't sound like admiration for Peyton Manning.
Well, I can assure you I have nothing but the greatest admiration for that great quarterback, for that terrific athlete. But you saw the game. We all saw the game. We all know what happened. Was I wrong?
Look, Doug.
Well, Sunshine, was I wrong?
Don't you dare call me Sunshine. I'm not one of your cronies there around the water cooler.
Was I wrong, Phil?
No, you were not wrong. But you sound like you enjoy the fact that Peyton Manning got beat badly.
I don't enjoy it any more than I enjoy. I don't enjoy it, to be honest with you, Margaret. Please don't get angry. I don't enjoy it any more than I enjoy talking to Margaret. You know.
Well, then I'll get up and leave.
No, wait a minute.
She's leaving.
Thank you.
What a baby.
Why do you call me a baby when you insult me?
What?
Why? Never mind.
Like a pill. You know.
Well, Doug, what do you expect if you're going to say something like that?
I'm telling you that because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, I get punished. She's punishing me for being gay. You know?
Hold on for a minute. Why do you say that?
Because I'm right with my prediction that the Seattle Seahawks would take the Denver Broncos out to the woodshed and spank their asses into hamburger. I'm sorry to put it that way. I'm sorry to humiliate you. I'm sorry to humiliate Bronco fans, but the Seattle Seahawks beat the Denver Broncos with a nail-studded board on the ass.
Okay, Doug, we get it.
I mean, well, you know, but because I'm a gay man and a gay journalist and I'm able to see things straight on and clearly, Margaret wants to punish me for that. She says I'm all, you know, bad and everything like that.
I'm not saying because you're gay. I'm simply saying that you don't have to insult me and the listeners with this seeming respect for Peyton Manning while you say that they wiped every nook and cranny of MetLife Stadium up with him.
Well, they did. You can say what you want, but they did. The Seattle Seahawks took the reputation of Peyton Manning in the biggest game in pro football, the Super Bowl. They took his reputation and they wiped their crotches with it. Thank you and good night.
What? Why is he hanging up?
I think he's mad.
Well, good. I'm glad he did hang up because he ought to be ashamed of himself.
Well, there's no need, Doug, if you're listening, to hang up. I mean, you've got a strong opinion. Margaret has a strong opinion. Why are you hanging up?
Doug, this is General Shaw. Now, I agree with Phil. You have a strong, although his opinion is very insulting.
No, I think he needs to be more respectful. You know,
look, when have you ever known Doug to worry about being respectful when he's got his, quote, truth to tell? You know, that's the thing about Doug, man. He's all about his truth, so... All right, Doug Danger.
Yeah, Doug? Yeah.
Hey, Bud, just put him on the air. I want to hear you off the air talking to him.
Yeah, I got to put you on the air. Yeah? Yeah, I know. Here.
Like I told that guy, you know, but he's some sissy from down Birmingham way.
Doug, you're on the air.
Okay. Yeah, look, I was just talking to Bud about Jerry Rimshot, who's a sports writer at Alabama. He's in the Southeast. He covers the Southeastern Conference. And I told him, I said, you mark my words. I'm a gay man and a gay girl. He said, look, you know, I come from the Southeast, and I'm trying to be open-minded. I'm trying to be broad-minded about these things, Doug. Every time you say you're gay, it makes it harder and harder for me to, you know, get you in a press box for an Alabama game. I said, I could care less if I'm never in a press box for an Alabama game. You try and tell me the anti-gay? Say no. And
all right, Doug, what's your point?
My point is this. I told him, I said, you watch, the Seattle Seahawks are going to take the Denver Broncos, and they're going to slap their face a couple of times, backwards and forwards, and then, you know, push them down onto a bed, theoretically, and have their... I'm talking theoretically.
All right, well, but we saw what happened. They got their ass kicked, and you were right. And I think the reason why I've got you on the show is because you were damn close to predicting the score.
What score did you predict, Doug?
I said 50-10, Seattle over Denver. It was 43-8.
Ha ha, you're way off.
What? Man, I tell you, Dickman, you're dumb, but did I ever want to believe you're as dumb as you are right now? No.
What? What do you mean, way off?
Well, he said 43-8.
No, he didn't. He said 50-10. The final score was 43-8. He missed the winning score by 7 points, the losing score by 2. I'd say that's pretty damn good.
Now, you better believe it. And I'll tell you another thing. My good, close, personal friend Vernon Dozier, the high school football coach from Glendale, California... Man, he took the dog outside and did all kinds of nasty things to it on this one. He couldn't pick his rear end or his nose on this one.
All right, well, we're going to have Coach Dozier on here in a second to talk with you, Doug. And yes, Coach Dozier did miss his prediction. He picked the Denver Broncos 57-0. So,
well, it sounded to me. I remember when they were on Friday, and it was a big peeing match. That's what it was. It was a pee match. Excuse me.
Boy, I'll tell you.
All right, we're going to be back here. Vernon Dozier will be with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we will continue discussing the results of the game. And I would say the very uncanny ability of Doug Danger to pick the correct score. Phil Hendry Show. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Vernon Dozier going to join us. And then I want to get to this story of the guy that claims to have survived a year at sea. This man's name, Jose Salvador Albarengo. Did you hear about this? He washed ashore or he drifted ashore or he got on shore somehow last Thursday. And officials in the Marshall Islands they want to verify this guy's story. You know, they want to find out, let's just hold on for a second here before we start giving you the Tom Hanks Castaway Award, man. Just exactly what happened. All right, Vernon Dozier joining us from Glendale, California. Vernon, just heard Doug Danger. Doug didn't accurately, but he came very close to predicting the correct score last Friday on our show. He said 50-10 Seattle. It was 43-8. Obviously, your pick of 57-0 wasn't even close. What do you think?
Well, first of all, if you could go back and listen to the tape, when I said 57-0, I was simply reacting to what I thought was a ridiculous claim. He said
17 to 15. If you, do you remember that, Doug, at all, 17 to 15?
Yeah, I do remember that. And you said, well, how can it be 15? Well, you know, that would mean a field goal and a safety.
But my point is, you picked a close game.
I did pick a close game, but I had another look at it. I heard how you were protesting against the score that I had picked, and I thought, boy, you know what I really think? I think that I don't like what you're saying about my original pick, so I think I'm going to go and just say they're going to butcher him alive, and they did.
Yeah, well, but that's to me, that was a wild guess. That wasn't based on any knowledge of football.
Oh, is that right? And what was your prediction based on your 57 to nothing?
If you remember, my original prediction was 43-3,
Yeah, see, your original prediction sucked just as bad as my original prediction. So we got to go to the secondary prediction. And my secondary prediction was absolutely beautiful. Yours sucked more. So you see what I'm saying? In other words,
I don't see what you're saying. What I hear is a bunch of rules you're laying down here after the fact about how my pick was rotten. It was a rotten pick, and your pick was cool, you know. And you're right. Your pick was cool, and mine was rotten. But it wasn't rotten because I don't know football, and your pick wasn't good because you know football. Your pick was good because you just...
What, I got lucky? What, did the gay guy get lucky? Is that it?
I didn't say anything about you being gay.
Don't be unfair, Doug. He didn't mention you being gay.
Well, I mean, look, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I told you the reason why I was correct with my pick is because of my gay perception. All right?
What do you mean your gay perception? You know I'm never going to buy into that, your gay perception. I think you have perception like everybody else, and I think it was a lucky guess.
All right, so let's say my guess was a lucky guess. Now, what do you base your original pick of the Broncos destroying the Seattle Seahawks 43-3, I think you said. What do you base that on?
I base that on, you know something, that would have happened if.
Yeah, if. Yeah, here we go with the if.
Hold on for a minute, will you? That would have happened if Peyton Manning had a football team that did not choke like schoolgirls when he takes them to the... This guy took them to the Super Bowl. They played a great playoffs. They were poised. They were primed. They were sweet. They were tight. They looked good. They smelled good. Now they get into the Super Bowl.
Talking about, man.
I'm talking about how the Denver Broncos set up in this game as opposed to Seattle. They were looking sweet and fine. If the Denver Broncos were a female, they would have had the biggest breasts and the finest looking ass of each. Well,
what does that mean?
No kidding. What does that mean? Now you talk about me being gay. Hey. Let me tell you something, man. It's got nothing to. I'm trying to give you a relatable image, okay?
Yeah, but you're talking about the Denver Broncos were... What you're telling me is they were the better prepared of the two teams.
I'm saying that the Denver Broncos of the two teams, yeah, were the better-looking Super Bowl team. If the Denver... All right, let me put it this way. If the Denver Broncos were a baby, they would have had pink cheeks and a healthy giggle and no drool. Does that make sense?
No, it does not, man.
Hey, Vernon, what is it with you and if it was a baby...
What do you mean, what is it? Guys, trying to make me sound like I'm nuts.
No, you already sound nuts. What do you mean if the Denver Broncos were a baby and it had pink cheeks?
I'm telling you, if the Denver Broncos were a baby, it wouldn't be crapping in its diaper. If the Denver Broncos were a baby, there'd be no crap in the diaper. It would be laughing, and its cheeks would be pink, and it would belch, and it would like being thrown in the air. If the Seattle Seahawks were a baby, it would be screaming its guts loose and diarrhea everywhere.
Yeah, okay, that's fine, man, but guess who won?
Yeah, the baby with diarrhea. So as it turns out...
As it turns out what? As it turns out the baby, the Seattle Seahawk baby was healthy?
As it turns out, the Seattle Seahawk baby got healthy, and the Denver Bronco baby suddenly took sick.
Oh, will you get out of here, man? You know something, Coach? You just can't say you're wrong, and you hate like hell to be wrong when you're in competition with some gay writer for an Orange County newspaper. That's the part that's driving you nuts. I was right. You were wrong, Coach. I'll give you this. I think you're too distracted from planning for next season's football campaign with Belmar Academy to even concentrate on the Super Bowl.
All right, well, I'll take that.
Well, your analogies are really out there, man. I mean, if the Denver Broncos were a baby.
Well, hold on for a minute. What's wrong with that? I tried to draw a picture as clear as I can for my team, for the people on the radio, for your show, Phil, for everybody. I'm simply saying the Denver Broncos, if they were, for instance, let's say the Denver Broncos.
All right, no more analogies, a beautiful woman or a baby.
No, hold on. What if the Denver Broncos were just a pair of underwear, just something as simple as that, a pair of underwear? Oh, okay. If the Denver Broncos were a pair of underwear, there'd be no skid marks. Goodbye.
Hello? Okay, Doug?
Yeah.
All right, so you're the last man standing.
Well, I figured as much. I mean, look, you know, I admire the coach. I think the coach has done a great job, and not only with his teams, but also on your program. But I don't know. Maybe it's because he is a teacher. He uses these ridiculous comparisons. If the Denver Broncos were a pair of underwear, and all I said was there'd be no skid marks, and he hangs up.
Yeah, I don't know why he hung up either. Do you know, Bud?
Yeah, I talked to him later. He said if the Denver Broncos was a pair of underwear, they'd fit.
You know, I think he needs a psychiatrist or something, if you want my honest opinion.
Yeah, ditto.
I think that the coach needs to get in and talk to somebody, you know.
Well, why do you say that, Phil? I think that's very unfair for Coach Dozier. He's had a wonderful season himself.
That's fine, but what is it with if the coach... You see, there comes a point where a guy's just working too hard. And I think, Coach Dozier's one of these guys that has a cot in the office.
Oh, this guy's burning the midnight oil.
Oh, yeah. He's got a cot in the office and the chalkboard. All right, listen, Doug, thank you very much. Congratulations on your pick. And we'll be looking for your call next week in the Orange County Courier.
Uh-huh.
Doug Danger, folks. Gay man and gay journalist. And
and he picked the winning score was 43-8. He said 50-10.
He said 50-10 would be the final Seattle. And he was damn close. And I'll tell you, if Doug Danger were a baby, he'd be fat and pink and happy and not drooling with no diarrhea.
Yeah, and Coach Dozier, he'd be a baby with a dirty diaper.
Exactly. I don't know, man. All right, so coming up, Jose Salvador Albarengo. Here's a guy with a tale of survival on the ocean that you're going to find fascinating. The question is it true? Did it actually happen? Did this cat experience the very things that he says he experienced? We're going to find out here when we come back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. But first, this from the Phil Henry Show website. You know, with a backstage pass, and that is a subscription to our website, whether a month, 6 months, or a full year, you have access to more hours of probably the most original radio show that has ever been heard than you have access to any hours of any other radio show. You know, one Phil Henry show is worth about 20 of any other guy's. That's how hard we work around here, and we've got over 15 years of full radio shows in our archives. We also have our video cast archive. We also have a miscellaneous archives of webcasts that we've done, television pilots we've done, interviews we've done on TV and radio and in print. And we have our news feed. And it's all there on our daily show log as well at philhenryshow.com. And once you go through all of that, you visit our online store and you can pick up a hat, a T-shirt, Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie, Bobby Dooley keychains. We got coffee mugs. We got shot glasses. And we have a collection of our classic best of CDs. And these are going fast. Once we're out of the hard copy of all of these, man, we are completely out of the best of CDs. We do have our downloads, and it's all there at philhenryshow.com. So head on over until the 15th of February. If you buy a year's subscription to the Phil Henry Show website, you get a free year, and that is a gift subscription that you can give to a Valentine. So it's our way of celebrating Valentine's Day. We're kind of a rough and tumble crew here. We smell, we drink too much beer, but we do have romantic hearts. The very essence of us is romance. And so one free year you get for a year's subscription to give to your Valentine. Check it out at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Back with a tale, maybe fishy, maybe not, of Jose Salvador Albarengo.
Yeah!
All right. Welcome back to world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and Glad to have you with us here. We're going to talk to you here about Jose Salvador Alvarenga. But I was just talking to the crew here off air about the one-man show that we debuted in San Francisco, and it's going to evolve. And by the time you see it again here in Southern California, it will be slightly different. And I think we did 90 minutes, you know.
Now, you did 90 minutes, Phil, but at the end of that 90 minutes, you looked like you were going to drop into a into a lump. And I, you know, I love you, Phil, but into a lump of stinking laundry.
Well, yeah, Phil, because you'd been stinking it up.
What do you mean stinking it up?
On account of you was sweating.
Well, sure, I was sweating, but I do use underarm, antiperspirant.
Well,
all right, whatever you say.
Well, okay, sorry if there was, but I can tell you I don't think there was. I'm a very fastidious guy. But yeah, I did 90 minutes, and I was supposed to only do an hour. And so you guys in San Francisco at the Sketch Fest, you owe me. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm joking. It was. I'm glad that we went 90. So anyway, having said all of that, it's fun. I like doing it, and we want to do more of it. I don't know why it is, but that seems to be a format that, if you can call it a format, being on the radio I like, and being on a stage I like, being on a live stage. I'm not necessarily saying on TV in front of a camera, you know, but I'm saying on a stage with the audience right there.
Well, you like the immediate response of the audience. You like the synergy, right, Phil?
Yeah, you know.
Yes, you like the synergy. And
well, Margaret, why do you have to accentuate the word? We know what it means.
You may know what it means, but I'm accentuating it. So you not only have the word's meaning, you also have the electricity of the word. The word is very electric. Okay?
Yeah, but
well, wait, bud. The word is very electric, and so when Phil is on stage and he has the synergy, you see?
Yeah, you're all going weird.
No, bud, the only one going weird around here is you.
No, you're right, Margaret. Thank you. You're right. I have the synergy.
Well, don't be sarcastic.
Look, Margaret, when you say things the way you say them, you're opening yourself up for all kinds of sarcasm, you know?
Margaret, you're saying that word like you yourself are trying to get over a stroke, and it's some sort of mouth therapy.
Mouth therapy? Did I hear you say that?
Yes, you're going synergy as if there's a nurse holding your hand while you're trying to do the word.
Excuse me.
Oh, God.
Do you need water? Yes, I do.
Let me help you.
No, get away from me.
All right.
God, Margaret, don't talk to him that way.
I don't want him in the kitchen with me, all alone.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, here is the guy's story. His name, Jose Salvador Alvarenga. His survival tale is the stuff of a Hollywood script. Adrift and alone on the ocean for more than a year, the 37-year-old castaway says he survived by eating turtles, birds, and sharks that he caught with his bare hands during an incredible voyage from Mexico to a remote coral atoll in the Marshall Islands. That's a journey of 12,500 kilometers, maybe 9,000 miles, 10,000 miles, something like that. He told his rescuers he would catch small sharks by dangling one arm into the water and using it as bait. As a shark closed in, he would grab its tail and haul it onto his 7.3-meter fiberglass boat. His story, recounted after he washed ashore clad only in ragged underpants on Thursday last week, sounds almost too incredible to be true. And at least one official in the Marshall Islands wants to verify Alvarenga's account before he swallows the survival tale hook, line, and sinker.
That's pretty good, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I bet the guy wrote it like that.
Yeah, of course they do. They always write it like that. You want to make it sound like it's all about the fish and everything.
All right, thank you, guys. We're on the air, okay?
Sorry.
For one thing, Alvarenga appeared to be too well-fed, said Guy Bing, the acting secretary of foreign affairs for the Marshall Islands, who met with Alvarenga on Monday. Boy, only in a country like the Marshall Islands where will the acting secretary of foreign affairs meet a castaway or a guy that's washed up on shore, because that's what passes for a foreign dignitary in a country like that.
That's good, Phil.
Thank you. So
when you say foreign dignitary, you mean the guy washing onto shore?
Yes. So, Mr. Bing said, quote, "It does sound like an incredible story, and I'm not sure if I believe his story." So at least one man has openly said, "Guess what, Mr. Alvarenga? You're full of it." When we saw him, he was not only he was not really thin compared to other survivors in the past. I have some doubts. Once we start communicating with where he's from, we'll be able to find out more information. U.S. Ambassador Thomas Armbruster, who is acting as an interpreter for Marshall Islands authorities, also has some doubts about the story. Mr. Armbruster said the fisherman told him that he was originally from El Salvador, but he'd been living in Mexico for 15 years before his epic voyage. He said he's a shrimp and shark fisherman, Mr. Armbruster said. He looked better than one would expect. Well, about 1,000 curious onlookers crowded around the dock at the Marshall Islands capital of Majuro on Monday for a glimpse of the long-haired fisherman who smiled and waved briefly before he was whisked away for medical checkup at Majuro Hospital. Sporting a bushy beard and clutching a can of Coke, he was helped down the gangplank of a police patrol boat after a 22-hour trip from Ebon Atoll, the southernmost cluster of coral islands in the Marshalls, where he washed ashore after apparently setting sail from Mexico on the 24th of December, 2012. Wow. Eric von Sabiel, an ocean circulation expert at the University of Northern of NSW, New Zealand. Is that North, South, New South Wales? Is that NSW?
I don't know. I think that would be North...
That's north-southwest.
Yes, that's north-southwest. What do you mean north-southwest?
Well, isn't that what NSW means?
Well, to me, it means north... New...
You talk about New South Wales? Where's that?
It's in Wales.
No, it ain't. It's in Australia, man, New South Wales. It's a province of ours, a state of Australia. So he said he had an answer to doubts that the castaway's amazing tale of survival is true. He said, quote, it's garbage. Tracking of what happens to rubbish... He says garbage is what helps tell the tale. Tracking of what happens to rubbish, such as plastics tossed or washed into the sea, suggests a drifting boat from Mexico could have made its way to the Marshall Islands. I think his story is correct, at least as far as the science of ocean currents goes, said Dr. Van Sabiel. It would take about 1 to 2 years, approximately, to drift all the way across the Pacific, he said. As it was, the castaway was lucky to make landfall because of his next and final stop would probably have been the giant floating garbage patch in the North Pacific between Hawaii and California. If he would not have had the fortune to hit a beach, then he probably would have ended up in the garbage patch.
Why that?
Well, it's going clockwise, isn't it, the current? So it would have sucked him up north into the middle of this big garbage patch, which has gotten even more garbagey since the tsunami and all of that stuff that washed ashore. I told you about my neighbor, right?
Well, this is the guy that says he ran into a boat. Yeah, sure.
Now, wait a minute. He didn't say he ran into a boat.
I mean a bus.
Yeah, well, he didn't say he ran into the bus. He said a friend of his did, you know.
Yeah, they always say it's a friend of theirs.
Well, so what is it? All of a sudden, everybody's full of crap when they say that they've had some outrageous or unlikely experience at sea? Who knows? This guy may be telling the truth. We live in such a skeptical age now. Everybody suspects everybody of pulling a fast one. You know, everyone thinks that everybody's circulating that picture of Bill Gates. I put a picture on the Facebook page the other day, and it was a picture of the moon. And I said, as we all know, this is made of green cheese, and now NASA is making it available to you this one time only, right into NASA and get a piece of the green cheese that came from the moon.
Are you telling, and what do you think people are going to do?
Based upon what I have learned over the last month or so on Facebook, I bet a good number of them will, about half of them. You know, you can't... See, here's the thing. Not only are a lot of people stupid, but now they get really angry because they think that you tricked them. So in other words, if you say, for instance, you know, there's zombies loose and they're eating faces down in Miami, they're going to believe that. We've got grown adults in this country that believe in zombies. And they'll get angry and probably even violent if you tell them we were only kidding. That's how dumb. And I remember someone saying once...
Well, Phil, you shouldn't call those people dumb.
Oh, yes, I will call them dumb.
Well, wait a minute, Phil. That's cruel of you.
No, they're dumb. There's no other way. You got to say it. Or you're going to... What are we supposed to do now, man? Do some dance of sensitivity around people that are just... That believe in zombies? That believe in cannibal zombies? No way. No way. And you know, it's been said that the gap between the dumbest of us and the smartest is ever widening. You know, if you don't stay up to speed on what's happening technologically, informationally, etc., you're getting lost in the shuffle, man. And now I got people that are expecting Bill Gates to be giving away money for free, the moon made of green cheese, and flesh-eating zombies. All of this exists, and if you tell them that you're kidding, they don't look in the mirror and say, boy, what a schmuck I am. They get mad at you. And they all, and here's the other thing they pitch. They like to pitch this one. Man, rich people are always putting it over on the poor people. No, that's not true. Smart rich people are always putting it over on dumb poor people, but I would say that it's probably the opposite if you're meeting a really smart poor guy and a really dumb rich guy. So, no, it ain't got nothing to do with rich and poor. It's got to do with smart and dumb, more or less. All right. So this guy says he would have wound up in a garbage patch as we talk about this guy, Alberengo. Foreign Ministry officials said Alberengo told them during a debriefing that he was a 37-year-old whose full name was Jose Salvador Alberengo. He said he lived in Tapachula near the Mexican border with Guatemala and worked for a company named Camaronera de la Costa. Ain't that shrimp?
Yes, Camaron is a shrimp.
So Alberengo said he was on a shark fishing expedition with a youth named Ixel when strong winds blew them off course and they became lost in December 2012. He said the boy, described as 15 to 18 years old, died a few weeks into the ordeal because he could not eat raw bird meat. The surviving fisherman was found disoriented and clad only in ragged underpants last Thursday after a 7.3-meter fiberglass boat floated onto a reef. Unable to speak English, he communicated to his rescuers through pictures and gestures that he'd survived the 12,500-kilometer odyssey by eating turtles, birds, and fish and drinking turtle blood when there was no rain. He told the Telegraph in London that he had no idea where the Marshall Islands were. His first words upon spotting land, "Oh, God, I just killed a bird to eat and saw some trees," he said. "I cried, oh, God, I got to land and had a mountain of sleep." I read the logbook of William Bly when they were cast away by Fletcher Christian, and he had something like 18 men on this launch, and they survived 3,000 miles across the South Pacific. They survived 3,000 miles, and it was about a three-month voyage, I think, but it wasn't a year. But they did survive on rainwater. They survived on birds they caught. They survived on some fish they were able to catch. And they survived on the blood of these birds that they drank. So we know of these tales of survival, but we certainly don't know them in modern times, because how many people get shipwrecked or cast away in a day and age with GPS, air traffic, coast guards, all kinds of search and rescue operations. It's very, very unlikely. We'll be back with a conclusion to this magnificent tale and more on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Ahoy! Land ho! Land ho! Land ho! Hey, it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. We're talking about this guy, Alberengo. You know, these stories of being lost at sea or any story having to do with the ocean, some tall tale from the ocean, unless you've got photographs and another account, I mean, they're really hard to prove, you know?
Well, what about this one you're talking about just moments ago about the guy and the woman in Hawaii?
Oh, I remember that. Phil, you never believed that. I thought that was terrible of you. That was a terribly heartbreaking story.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
But when was that, Mr. Henry?
This story that Margaret bought...
Don't make it sound like I'm the imbecile. You're the one that won't believe that true love will.
Oh, well, wait. Hold. What do you mean true love will? Hold the phone. This guy goes to Hawaii. This is a true story. I read the news, and I kept reading to see if there was a follow-up on this thing, because you got to be kidding me with this story. This guy and his new bride go to Hawaii for their honeymoon, right? They rent a boat or something, I think a sailboat or some damn thing, to go sailing out between Maui and that island across from Maui that the Navy used to use for gunnery practice. I forget the name of the island now. Can somebody look that up for me? And, they, while in this boat overnight, something happens, because the next morning, the boat drifts ashore on this Navy island with only the guy in it, and he gets out of the boat, and he uses one of these phones. There's a phone box, I guess a series of these phone boxes on the island that the naval gunnery guys would use to call in these artillery strikes, etc., And he uses this to communicate to Maui and say, I have drifted ashore. I lost my wife overnight. She was attacked by a shark. She bled to death, and I put her body in the water, and it just drifted away. And it was so terribly heartbreaking, and I fell asleep, and I washed up on shore.
And you think that's bullcrap?
Are you kidding me or something? And they have to believe this? That sounds like the biggest load I've ever heard in my life. You want to know why? First of all, if your wife gets bit by a shark, and even if she bleeds to death, you're not going to just dump her body in the drink, for God's sake. What is that? You know? You're going to at least hold on to the body for some, just to prove what you're saying is right. And on top of everything else, how about a funeral? How about the proper internment of this poor woman after such a horrific ordeal? But no, this guy says that he just, I didn't know what else to do, and I just let her drift away, and then he fell asleep. Are you going to get one minute of sleep after something like that happens to you? I'd be awake all night trying to flag down a ship, something. I know that, I shouldn't use myself as an example.
Yeah, you can't use yourself, Mr. Henry, on account of you're weird.
Oh, am I that weird, man, that I'm that much different from normal people?
Well, you don't know, Phil. The weirdness... You're pretty weird.
Wait a minute. Are you going to sleep after you lose your wife?
If I'm tired, yes. It depends, Phil. If it's been a long ordeal and I got to bag some Z's.
Oh, get out of here. So anyway, that's what they had to believe. They retrieved this guy from this island. Well, what happened? My wife was with me. We rented this boat. She got bit by a shark. She bled to death. And I never read anything about this guy being charged with any crime. And, of course, with no body, you can prosecute a murder even if you don't have a body. It's not true that you must have a body in order to prosecute somebody for murder. You don't have to. You can collect a mountain of circumstantial evidence, in fact, and convict somebody of murder. But it's a tough one to do. It's a tough, from what I understand, watching all the investigation discovery that I watch.
Phil, investigation, aren't you embarrassed saying, oh, according to investigation discovery?
No, not at all. Why should I be?
Well, it's not, you don't sound like you've hung out with cops or anything.
I haven't hung out with that many cops. I watch TV.
So that's where you get all your information.
Absolutely. And according to the TV that I watch, Beaver Cleaver,
Yeah, Beaver Cleaver lives in Springfield, same town as the Simpsons.
All right. Anyway, nothing came of it. The guy was, we're awfully sorry to hear that. See you later. Thank you. I think the guy was from India or something.
From India?
Yeah, he was. I think they were an Indian couple. And off he went. And that was it. I haven't heard anything since. No arrest, no nothing. And I that the cops in Hawaii are probably, they don't buy it, but what are they supposed to do?
Well, if you say you don't need a body, why didn't they begin to investigate thoroughly and vigorously?
Well, what are you going to do, man? I mean, where do you start? There's got to be some kind of evidence leading up to it. Was there an argument? Is there a will? Is there a life insurance policy? Was there violence in the family? I mean, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think they had any of that stuff. And they don't even have a body. And they got to take his word for all this stuff? Man, I'll tell you, that's the perfect murder.
Well, I don't think there must be something else. You look into it, because I refuse to believe that some jackball gets away with murder with a flimsy premise like that.
I'm telling you that that's all that there was. Now, maybe there's been something since that I missed.
I'll bet you anything there was.
Well, if there was, I'd like to find it, because I didn't hear anything about it after that, and I looked for a long time, and it was the biggest load of horse dung. I didn't buy it at all. Now, this guy that drifted onto the shore there of the Marshall Islands, there's a dead kid now. Now we find out he was with a kid that was 15 to 18 years of age, and the kid's dead. Now, what's his last name? And where'd he come from? And was he a member of this guy's crew? Were they co-employees of somebody else? Is there a family missing this kid? This guy's story, you're going to find out real fast whether this guy's telling the truth or not. And if he's lying, I got money that says it's got something to do with him killing this kid. What do you think?
Phil, quit acting like you're Sherlock Holmes, all right?
Wait, you want me to start looking into this stuff, and this guy says there's a kid that's dead?
Yeah, I agree with Mr. Henry. Maybe the guy strangled a kid or something and used him for shark bait or something like that.
Yeah, might have used the kid for bait to keep it stay alive.
What are you two clowns talking? What do you mean used him for bait to stay alive? Why, that's the largest load of hogwash. Man, the stink of that coming off the hogs you're washing. Friend, you'll never get those hogs clean with that kind of hogwash. What are you laughing at?
Go get some water, will you? All right. So anyway, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for being a part of this magnificent radio show this evening. I hope it was as fun for you as it was for us. We'll be back tomorrow night. Visit us online at philhenryshow.com. Remember, to the 15th, you can buy a year free and get a gift subscription free. It's our Valentine's special, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Four, three, two, one.